This is the Rufus Project. It's free. It's like three podcasts for the price of one. Even though all three would still be free, never mind. You know what? We love bringing you this podcast for free, and we can keep doing that if it's just a little bit of extra help from you as well. How can you help? So glad you asked. First up, find the Rufus Project on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube, on Ustream. Head to our homepage, therufusproject.podomatic.com, and share us on social media. The more people that find out, the more people that listen, the more follows we get, the more we can give you guys. Oh yeah. Don't want to share the entire thing? Maybe if we bring up something that you like or one of our competitions you think would appeal to others. Share us around for that reason. If you don't want to share and would like to give us something a little bit more substantial, if you head to that homepage, therufusproject.podomatic.com, you can hit the donate button and throw a few dollars our way. Want something material for your dollars? We've got you covered there too. We have a Spreadshirt store, therufusproject.spreadshirt.com.au. Here you can find a fine selection of men's, women's, and kids' shirts with a grand total of one design, but you can pick your colour. We've also got the recent edition of the Rufus Project beverage dispenser. That's right, a coffee mug with our unofficial and public domain logo prominently on the side. You know you want it, go get it. Finally, yep, I'm going to pimp myself out. If you have a product or service that you would like us to talk about in this very advertising section that I'm putting in at the very front of the podcast, let us know. You can get in touch with us by email at rufusreviews.gmail.com. We definitely would love to hear from you, and we look forward to any support you can give us. Thanks a lot. Now on with this podcast. Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project, your fortnightly guide to a geeky movie, really anything that we find particularly interesting that we want to talk about to you. I'm your host, Trevor Holland, and very, very soon we'll also hear from my good friend, co-host, and king of cult cinema in Brisbane, Christian Fletcher. But what do we have in store for you this time around? After Christian laid down the challenge last time, I am coming through with my choice of Desert Island albums. Quite an eclectic mix, if I may add. Christian is going to tell us about the Ozploitation movies, yet again another very interesting genre. I have a look at the controversial movie, The Interview, and find out if it really is worth the fuss. And then we're going to see if Greased Lightning can strike twice with an Olivia Newton-John John Travolta team-up from 1983. Aside from that, we have the geek news, information about upcoming events around Brisbane, and another awesome competition. Don't worry, I know there's no interview this time around, but we have got some beauties coming up. It's just that wonderful, wonderful, wonderful time of trying to work out when everyone's available. Always fun. That's enough from me for now. So how about you sit back, relax, and enjoy the podcast. And now, the geek news. Look, quite a bit's happened with the whole data retention thing in Australia. I thought I'd just focus on one part of it. Green Senator Scott Ludlam, who is a bit of a folk hero when it comes to Australian Parliament, or at least as close as you can get with a federal politician, in a question time about the new data retention policy, pointed out a few, I suppose, holes in the legislation, and determine that if you are using public Wi-Fi, say, at a cafe, at a university, or even Parliament House. That means your data will not be retained. So essentially, if you want to avoid data retention, go get a burger or eat in the Parliament House cafeteria. Your choice. There is a video of this online on YouTube you can find quite easily, and yeah, watching the person that he's questioning getting more and more flustered is almost as entertaining as the line of questioning he's using in the first place. Now, kind of in the opposite direction from data retention, the Australian government has also released a YouTube video on cybersecurity awareness, or how to keep your details private. It seems kind of hypocritical, but then you watch the video itself, and it is atrocious. You have Merrick, a fairly popular comedian, doing this jokey video about cybersecurity, and there is outdated and quite insulting and disparaging nerd jokes. There is very juvenile humour, and you know what? At one point, it even gets a bit on the racist side. Essentially, it is quite astoundingly bad. And it actually got the editor of Gizmodo Australia to use the following term: pull your f***ing socks up. For him to come out with that in print is quite impressive. I have linked to it below. You can check it out if you want, but I do warn you, it is terrible, atrocious, and really is just a waste of taxpayers' money. Kind of like the data retention scheme. Oh, I let that slip out, didn't I? The Australian Home Entertainment Distributors Association has released market data for 2014, and what they have found is that sales of physical media in Australia has gone down. So we're talking Blu-rays, DVDs, that sort of stuff. Wherever digital is on the rise. Now, what this doesn't, of course, take into account is the fact that you can buy most DVDs and Blu-rays at a fraction of a cost and get them shipped in from overseas and save yourself quite a bit by doing so. So I'm thinking their stats are a bit skewed, but I would not be at all surprised if that's the trend. Obviously, being able to have digital copies of your stuff means that it's all easier to store. You don't have to worry about cases everywhere and folders full of discs, which I have, but that's me. And of course, the convenience of tapping a few buttons and bring it up on screen. You know, digital, it doesn't fully replace it, I feel. A lot of the time, there is a lot of... I do like the extra content on the discs most of the time. But yeah, really, there is no surprise here that physical media is definitely on the way down. And to help continue that trend, both Foxtel Presto and The Stan guys have revealed that they are in talks with Australian ISPs about perhaps allowing their service to be provided quota-free through particular ISPs. This would be an excellent idea. Look, there's no doubt that Presto is going to be available quota-free through Telstra, which already peers a lot of the Foxtel stuff, and Foxtel has actually also released its own broadband service, which has pretty terrible data plans, but if you are using it for Foxtel services, especially like Foxtel Presto, Foxtel Play, that of course won't count towards your quota. But yeah, tell you what, if Stan can team up with iiNet, for example, I'm not biased, it just happens to be my provider, then it probably will become a must-buy for me. But anyway, a bit more on Stan a bit later. I will say about Presto, though, I did get a trial of the Foxtel Presto service, hoping that I'd be able to give you a full review, but straight out, the Android app was buggy as hell and very limited in its availability across devices, and when I hooked through to the Chromecast, I got a black screen and sound. Not good enough, Foxtel. If you're going to charge more for less content, at least make sure it bloody well works. Stan, however, is definitely going strong. I think it's really safe to say that these guys want to get a solid, popular service up and running before Netflix launches a bit later this year. To that end, they are actually providing Better Call Saul, the Breaking Bad spin-off. It's available for streaming on the service the day after this show screens in the US. As a counterpoint, Netflix, which was confirmed was going to be showing the series, is not putting it on their service until after the last episode has screened in the US, and then that's fully going to be available. So do you know what that means? That means we have something available digitally in Australia before it's available on Netflix in the US. Mind-blowing here. And I am going to call it now. Between this competition, between Foxtel, between Stan, and when Netflix comes in, this push to have the data peered with particular internet providers, giving users that quota-free option. Look, 2015, I'm calling it now, is going to be the year that streaming really and truly hits Australia. I know we've had it before, but let's face it, what we've had prior to now is completely laughable and pathetic. Someone has finally listened, and it's going to happen, guys. By the end of this year, you're going to have a good selection of streaming content in Australia. It's about 10 years too late, but at least we finally got there. And now from TV to gaming. Two of my favourite games on the old Sega Mega Drive growing up were the Toe Jam and Earl games. If you haven't played these, they are great fun and have a really good sense of humour. And the announcement has been made by the original Toe Jam and Earl designer Greg Johnson and his development studio Human Nature Studios, who released Doki Doki Universe on the PlayStation platforms, have announced that a new Toe Jam and Earl game is in the works and coming our way. Kind of is hinted that it's going to be mobile, but I can keep dreaming for a proper full-on retail release, can't I? Can't I? Come on, Toe Jam and Earl, funkiest game in the universe. Trust me, if you haven't played it, track it down. You can probably play it on thearchive.org, or there's plenty of emulator stuff out there. I'm pretty sure you can find a copy of this to play online. Good fun. In movie news, after quite a bit of speculation, back and forwarding, and just a few leaked emails, Sony and Marvel have confirmed that Spider-Man is going to appear in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He's going to appear in an upcoming movie and is also going to get his own standalone film. Now, my speculation was that Spidey was going to appear in Captain America 3, Civil War. I was hoping to get that recorded before it was confirmed, but I'm a bit too late. It has actually come through shortly before the recording of this news section. Going nabbit. But what they haven't confirmed, and what I'm going to stand up and say now, is that Spider-Man will appear in the teaser at the end of Avengers 2. You heard it here, guys. Just wait and see. You just wait and see. It's going to happen. And to wrap it up, to balance out some of the news from last time about the stupidity of the Australian games classification system, I thought I would provide a nice little counterpoint by saying that Mortal Kombat 10 has come through and is going to be released in Australia with an R18+. A game for adults being rated correctly for Australian release with no fuss, no bother, and no cuts. Is it that hard? Can we just do this consistently? And I'm not going to fall down that rabbit hole again. I'm just going to celebrate the fact that we actually have a game released classified correctly using the R18+. Clap, 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 clap. Keep it up. And that's news. For those of you who remember last podcast, will probably remember that Christian kind of laid down a bit of a challenge for me at the end of his feature. And yes, you know what? I'm going to take him up on that. So this time you get to put up with my Desert Island discs and some of my favourite music. To say my taste is rather eclectic and broad is a bit of an understatement, and trying to nail this down to a workable selection of albums that I can cover over in a relatively short podcast segment, amazingly, fiendishly difficult. But I have come down with a collection. You may consider some of them a little bit of a cheat, but I do not care. I'm going to be stuck with these albums. It's my choice, guys. So let's get this underway, hey? There's no secret that I'm quite a fan of the 80s. I do like quite a lot of 80s music. What a lot of people don't know, though, is that I particularly enjoy that post-punk period, that transition from 70s punk into the 80s sound. And trying to find something that encapsulates that well is quite difficult. A lot of the stuff that does come out around that time is pretty uneven. Probably an honorable mention I'll do now is Jimmy and the Boys, who released an amazing album called Teddy Bear's Picnic. But it just, like I said, pretty uneven, so I can't really include it as a Desert Island disc. What I can choose, however, is a movie soundtrack. A movie called That Summer that came out in 1979. The movie itself, it's pretty dodgy, but the soundtrack is unbelievable. You've got a couple of appearances there from Ian Drury and the Blockheads with Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, and also What a Waste. Elvis Costello, amazing artist, appears a couple of times with some top songs, including my favourite of his, Watching the Detectives. You've got the Ramones. You've got the Boomtown Rats singing three songs, and none of them are I Don't Like Mondays. It's amazing. Patti Smith is on there, Nick Lowe. It really is just an amazing soundtrack with an amazing collection of songs. So for that reason, like I said, I'm going to start off with That Summer, the soundtrack, which was actually released on the 25th of May, 1979. She's watching the detectives. Ooh, it's so cute. Now you may notice a bit of a pattern here, but for my next choice, I'm actually going to go back even further to quite an impressive selection from the 70s. However, this collection came to light quite a bit more recently on an album that was released just last year. And yeah, I'm going to talk about the soundtrack of one of my favourite films of 2014, Guardians of the Galaxy, Awesome Mix Volume 1. Ooga chaka, ooga, ooga, ooga chaka, ooga, ooga, ooga chaka, ooga, ooga, ooga chaka, ooga, ooga, ooga chaka. I can't stop this. If you want a cross-section of the 70s, that's just going to make you smile, just going to make you dance and sing along, this is it. Right from the start with the Ooga Chaka Ooga Chakas are Hooked on a Feeling, all the way through to Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell doing Ain't No Mountain High Enough. This is a high energy mix of excellent 70s tunes that are just so listenable. It's too easy to put this on repeat and just have a ball. The flip side, though, is that I listen to this, I want to watch the movie. So if I am stuck on a desert island with this album, I better have a Blu-ray player and a good TV to watch the movie on. Everything's all right. I'm hooked on a feeling. I'm high on believing. Looking at my next choice, it's like, gee, I seem to be stuck in the 70s. Truthfully, until I sat down and looked at what I was going to talk about, I would not have picked that myself. But I am going to go back now to 1972 and the excellent David Bowie album, The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. This really is one of the quintessential Bowie albums. Didn't know what time it was, the lights were low, oh, oh. I leaned back on my radio, oh, oh. Some cat was laying down some... Ranging from songs like Moon Age Daydream and Rock and Roll Suicide, Lady Stardust, going through to things like the manicness of Suffragette City, and of course the excellent title track Ziggy Stardust. It's another album that is great from start to finish. Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars is yet another big thumbs up. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a starman. Look, I am not entirely stuck into the 70s, and I do believe this next album will help to show that to everyone. Released in March of 2014, the Kaiser Chiefs' most recent album, Education, Education and War, is absolutely stunning. Picture yourself by a rocket. Picture yourself. I found with the Kaiser Chiefs, I quite liked their first couple of albums, and then the ones that followed after that, there were a couple more there, which I started going, yeah, okay, they've had their day. I'll just, you know, admit that, and you know, not every artist can continue to bring out brilliant stuff all the time. Then along came this album. Not only is it a fantastic return to form for this band, who are awesome live, by the way, I've just got to say that, I have seen them live. It also contains, I suppose, the culmination of the development of their style over the last number of years. So they have taken aspects from both those strong first couple of albums and some of the finer points of the subsequent releases to really bring it together in what is a very cohesive and in some cases quite powerful album. From the first single that was released, Coming Home, to the very thought-provoking and in some ways even somber Meanwhile Up in Heaven, there is quite a lot here. There's also a bit of the manicness of their original feel with My Life, which is quite strong, and Misery Company. I mean, you could actually imagine that being on, say, Off With Their Heads, you know, when that was released way, way back in a year. I can't remember off the top of my head, but we're not talking about that one. I don't need to know the year it was released. It's not important. One of the big treats of Education, Education and War, though, I do remember how many educations, is the song that the album title comes from, a song called Cannons. Not only is it itself quite a great song and does have a bit of an anti-war sentiment tucked in there, when you get to the end of the song, there's this extra treat of the amazing actor Bill Nighy. And he does a spoken word piece of a poem which was written by the lead singer, Ricky Wilson. And it just adds this amazing flavor to that song and to the album. Education, Education and More, really big thumbs up. But to wrap this up, you know what? I'm going to get a bit local. Yes, I'm going to pick an Australian album to go on this list. An album by who, you ask? Well, so glad you did. The wonderful Melbourne band, The Cat Empire. They're, if you haven't heard them, do yourself a favour, look them up. But they have this amazing blend of jazz, of funk, of hip-hop, with this solid core of big band horn sounds in the back to really have a sort of thing which can lift you so, so high, yet still have those more somber songs so that you don't feel exhausted by the end of the album. Their first album, self-titled The Cat Empire, well, it wasn't really their, well, their first commercially released album, I should say, was quite successful and did really put them on the map. But I do feel that their follow-up, Two Shoes, really started showing how strong this band is. The album starts off in full Cat Empire style with Sly. It's a big, bold, strong party anthem that, you know, just really pumps you up and gets you ready for what's coming. But then from there it actually gives you a bit of variety. Go a couple of tracks in to Lullaby, which is just a fantastic song about staying up all night watching movies. And yes, the lead singer Felix will make you a triple espresso so you can stay awake. Then there's the very somber, very soft, very laid-back Miserere, which it's so hard to describe, but it gives you this moment. It's almost a piece. You can imagine just sitting back, closing your eyes and drifting to this song before it turns around and starts coming back with Building You Up to a couple tracks later with Party Started, which is again another solid party song and gives you a bit more of the hip-hop feel that is blended into the Cat Empire style. The great thing too is that at the end of this album, when the final song, which is almost Latino style, The Night That Never Ended, finishes and then pops off to this little jaunty gem about getting a parking ticket with a hidden map on the back. Again, definitely worth hanging around and listening to the secret track for that one. But the big highlight for me is the title track. The song Two Shoes has to be probably one of my favourite Australian tracks and probably one of my favourite songs of all time. It really celebrates the joy of just living and just being who you are. And I will quote directly. There's a part in there where he's just describing things about himself and he gets to his ears. He goes, "In my ears, I'm wearing headphones that do play my favourite sound. Not the songs I'm told to like, but the songs that make me dance around." I cannot disagree with that sentiment. Two Shoes by the Cat Empire. Fantastic. "When my ears are wearing headphones that do play my favourite songs. Not music I'm told to like, but the songs that make me dance along. Those on my feet are shoes for dancing, dancing to be free. On my feet they're paying tribute to the Bobby Marley legacy. Now, after all that, I could have honourable mentions a mile long. I could make an entire podcast just listing music that I find great. But really, just to bring it down, there's a few movie soundtracks. The Grease soundtrack, Blues Brothers, Rocky Horror, Little Shop of Horrors. Great, great listens. I have a very wide collection of compilation albums, going right back to the 50s, coming up to very, very recent times in my collection as well. London Calling by The Clash, I almost felt bad leaving it out, but I wanted to try to keep my selection down to those five that I obviously mentioned before. But that's another one that's definitely so worth your time and is, again, a great example of a top band in their prime. So yeah, there you have it, my Desert Island Discs. Of course, Christian and I would love to hear what your favourite songs and albums are. Who knows, maybe we can throw in a bit more of a feature. Maybe we can make this a regular thing. Listen all the way through the podcast, listen to those contact details to get in touch with us, and let us know. We'd love, love, love to hear about the music that you like.
Okay, so I'm a few weeks late from Australia Day, but I thought, how about we look at the that rather interesting cult subgenre of the Ozploitation film. Now, this term has been bantered around since, I suppose, 2009, when Mark Hartley released his Not Quite Hollywood documentary, which was the wild, untold story of the Ozploitation films of Australia. Quentin Tarantino apparently penned the term Ozzyploitation, and it was Mark Hartley who then shortened it to Ozploitation. Now, these refer to films of the period post-1971 with the introduction of the R rating. These films usually took the form of low-budget horror, comedy, and action films, and oftentimes combining all three of these elements. The Ozploitation style peaked in the late 70s and early 80s, and a lot of those iconic Australian movies that we still know and love today can be referred to as an Ozploitation film. To make it a little bit simpler, these films were the anti-Picnic at Hanging Rock. They very much contrasted with the quality art films that were being released in the mid-70s, like Picnic at Hanging Rock and then My Brilliant Career by Gillian Armstrong. So these films were shipped overseas and in many ways played in the drive-in market. So they were seeing a side of Australia which to this day they probably think still exists and is a representation of our culture. Examples of Ozploitation films, and probably ones that you'll go, oh wow, would be BMX Bandits from 1983. Now this is more of a children's family movie, featuring a very young Nicole Kidman. However, it featured many elements of the Ozploitation genre and a lot of actors and directors, i.e. Brian Trenchard-Smith, who directed the film. Brian Trenchard-Smith was also famous for the infamous Turkey Shoot from 1982, showing Australia in a post-apocalyptic world where people are out for blood. In terms of creature features, in the mid-80s we sequelized the Howling movies by releasing The Howling 3, The Marsupials. This is so bad it's good. And also another creature feature, Razorback from 1984, which saw people terrorized by a giant boar. But getting away a little bit from the horror, you also had these 70s works like The Man from Hong Kong, The Adventures of Barry McKenzie, Alvin Purple. These are all very much lumped under the category of Ozploitation. So as you can see, we're dealing with subject matter and plot lines that really aren't quite the standard in mainstream, say, Hollywood films. Interestingly, these Ozploitation films very much fit the Australian horror mold, which is almost this fear of landscape, fear of the unknown. You think Wolf Creek, they take everyone out into the middle of the desert, and at night time it can be quite a scary place. And I think in these sort of films they traded off that, and also the fact that these were being shipped overseas and played in drive-ins, they were setting up that real fear of, wow, Australia can be quite a scary place with all these very scary animals and possibly madmen roaming around. That said, the Ozploitation films are often ranked as some of the most popular of the Australian movies. Another perfect example would be Mad Max 1, which had a lot of mainstream success, and then Dogs in Space, which didn't have a lot of mainstream success, but is seen as so iconic and very much reflective of the alternative underground scene of Australia, and it starred Michael Hutchence from INXS. The films would follow anything from schlock horror to ochre comedy to frisky sex romps and everything in between. So Ozploitation was the ultimate in Australian exploitation cinema. And many films today, like Undead, the Spirig Brothers zombie films, are often regarded as modern Ozploitation films. But to me, the golden age was, as I mentioned, the late 70s and early 80s, where Australia really let its hair down and showed that it could be creative on a low budget and also show a side that foreigners and even us Australians might not normally see.
You know, for the movie review, I was planning to review Dumb and Dumber 2, but I saw Dumb and Dumber 2, and frankly, it made me angry then sad, so I don't particularly want to revisit that experience. Put it this way, the 2 is spelt T-O, and the humour goes downhill from there. So let's move on to something else, shall we? And I guess it's a bit of a out there one when you're looking at movies available in Australia at the moment. It has got some very limited screening release around the place, but at the end of the day, it's available on Netflix. And as we all know, Netflix is available for anybody who wishes to use it. So we're going to have a look at that controversial movie that came out overseas late last year, The Interview, starring Seth Rogen and James Franco. Now, if you've been living behind a rock, The Interview is the story of a journalist, Dave Skylark, played by James Franco, and his producer, Aaron Rappaport, who is played by Seth Rogen, and they managed to score an interview with Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea. The upshot is that the CIA then come to them and hatch a plan for them to assassinate Kim Jong-un in an effort to, you know, basically stop North Korea from launching nukes. Okay, it's got nice and controversial. There were complaints apparently from North Korea. It got pulled from distribution initially and then had very limited release and digital only release in late December. But really, is it worth all this fuss? At the end of the day, this really does seem less an indictment on North Korea and more a dig at the US's habit of sticking its nose in around the world and essentially not always making the best choices. If anything, the actual character of Kim Jong-un, played by Randall Park, is probably the highlight. When it comes to performances in this movie, he really does fill in a pretty strong performance with quite a bit of range. And what you see from the movie up to that point, it does come as a bit of a surprise. But essentially, The Interview is pretty much a series of, well, dick jokes in between some zany and out-there set pieces. If you have seen other movies such as, say, This Is the End, you're probably going to get a good feel for what the humour is like. And there is humour in there. There's definitely a few good laughs along the way. Not spectacularly funny, but enjoyable enough. Say, if you've got Netflix and you decide to give it a stream. So yeah, if you've got the access, check out The Interview. There are worse ways to spend your time. It's certainly better than going to see, I don't know, say, Dumb and Dumber 2. And if you've already got a Netflix subscription, it's obviously going to give you a much cheaper night of the movies. So The Interview. Yeah, it's enjoyable, it's silly, but it's definitely not worth the fuss that was made over it.
Mr. Rappaport, I'm Agent Lacey with Central Intelligence. You two are going to be in a room alone with Kim.
We got the interview!
The CIA would love it if you could take him out.
Hmm?
Take him out.
Like for drinks?
Like to dinner?
Take him out of the town?
No, take him out.
You want us to kill the leader of North Korea?
Yes.
What?
Boy? Oh boy. Welcome to what I hope will be our slightly more controlled, less rambly redeeming features, but you know what? I make no promises and neither does Christian. And as we mentioned last podcast, we're trying a few new things, including letting you know what the next one is. So no secrets, no bones about it. This fortnight, we got to watch Two of a Kind, a suppose kind of a follow-up to Grease in that Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta teamed up again in a, well, what would you call it, Christian? A wacky, zany romantic comedy?
Or a disaster. Plain and simple.
Well, you never know.
Well, I believe it's very much, I don't know if this is a way to say it, but Denny and Sandy, the later years. But in many ways, it touched on elements of their, let's say, relationship, if you were to see them as Denny and Sandy, elements of their relationship that you probably didn't really ever want to see years later. So it was, as you said, the 1983 repairing of the couple. And I believe it proved to me, and I don't know if it was the same for you, Trevor, but it proved that whilst they may have been quite successful with some singles and as a pairing in Grease, it doesn't necessarily translate in a follow-up film.
Would you say that Grease lightning doesn't strike twice?
Yeah, definitely not. And interestingly enough, the same year, I think it was 1983, John Travolta did Staying Alive. So really, it was not a good time for John Travolta, who was really trying to sequelize his previous hits. But two of a kind. Now, really, I can see why it rang fantastic, not warning signs to us, actually. It gave off this really great idea, this green light to go, hey, why don't we work on this idea? Hey, they tried it with Xanadu, trading on Olivia Newton-John's success in Grease, but why didn't they stop there? It's like they just wanted to dig the knife in even deeper. And two of a kind, honestly, Trevor, it's very rare that I actually can't physically almost get through an entire movie. Over a week of watching this movie, I could not wait for it to be over. Like, it started off so promising. Yes, it went downhill, but honestly, I don't think I've ever sort of sat through a more sort of excruciating film in recent memory. So, but, you know, I don't want to reveal too much just yet, but that's my overall consensus on the film at this stage.
Yeah. Well, you know what? There are people out there that probably do think a bit more highly of it than we do, and I've come across a little post here by Olivia Newton-John Rules on that wonderful website Amazon, and the comments are, oh my god, what was up with most people in the 80s? How could this have been a flop movie? And Xanadu? ! I think this is a really good movie. I have not even had it a day, and I have watched it 5.5 times and know most of the words. I love Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta together. I think they are brilliant. They work so well together. Olivia Newton-John is amazing. 5 stars.
Oh, Trevor, I can't help but laugh. Oh, my gosh. The fact that someone would sit through that movie 5 times in a 24-hour period and still live to be able to write that review honestly baffles me. But, you know, I think the secret is in his screen name being Olivia Newton-John Rules. I think he's obviously a fan and will do whatever he can to kiss and the ground she walks on. But to quote the dialogue ad nauseum, let me just actually, interesting, like he mentioned, you know, I can quote almost all of the dialogue. You know, is he good at doing the bit where, you know, Olivia Newton-John trials the edible sunglasses at the John Travolta is inventing. And I just love hearing from Olivia's, you know, Australian accent. Oh, that's disgusting. Tastes like shit. So is that some of the lines that he would be referring to? Or there's another line here. Where someone asks them, why did you get fired? And she goes, I flirted with a bank robber in the most deadpan accent. Okay, maybe I'm putting the ocker on a bit too much. But I don't know. Being, you know, saying those lines ad nauseum is probably not advisable. I would see a doctor, Olivia Newton-John Rules.
Yeah, well, I suppose the accent does stick out a bit. But I think maybe what we should do is, I guess, let people know who haven't seen it what Two of a Kind is about. Now, we've already mentioned it was from 1983, starred John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John, obviously with a bit of an attempt to cash in on that previous Grease popularity. It's actually rated 4.6 out of 10 on IMDb, which does surprise me. But to give you a bit of a rundown, again, I'll just go straight from the IMDb description here. The storyline is that God has had just about enough of the humans' attitude, so he will destroy the planet very soon. It's up to a struggling inventor and a bank teller, both with very amateur criminal minds, to save the world. Doesn't that sound nice and stirring?
Shock horror. Oh, definitely. And you could see how the producers or the writers of this decided, hey, pairing of Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta, this fantastic plot, as Trevor's just read out. And, pretty much a great cast. You've got the two leads that we've mentioned, Scatman Crothers, Gene Hackman, Academy Award winner Beatrice Straight, a couple of other names you mentioned, Trevor, too, that are in the cast that are well known.
Did I? Yes. Ernie Hudson makes...
Oh, the gentleman from Ghostbusters. Yeah. I've forgotten his name.
Winston Zeddemel. Well, Ernie Hudson from Ghostbusters in an earlier appearance, and probably not one that is particularly noteworthy, where he gets to play a combination of good cop, bad cop, all in the one character.
Definitely. And I think I even saw... Mr. Kellerman from Dirty Dancing amongst the cast as well, too. And he plays one of these, I suppose, I don't know if angels is quite the term we should use, Trevor, of these, I suppose, there's three sidekicks that you see throughout the film that God has sent down to Earth to get to work on these two.
Yeah, and they're very effective as well once they're banned from using their powers. So, to expand a bit further, they've basically got a week to show God that these two unlikely couple can make sacrifices for each other to prove to God that they're still good in the world, or else he's just going to flood the entire thing and kill everybody. They meet when John Travolta, who is a struggling inventor, hence the edible sunglasses, wonder why he's struggling, decides to rob a bank that Olivia Newton-John is the teller of. And that's where all the zaniness begins. I tell you what, for a bank robber and his victim, I find that their relationship builds very, very fast and gets very friendly very quickly. And I just thought in the back of my head, are we seeing like a bit of a Stockholm Syndrome thing going here?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It doesn't seem to waste any time. It seems to go straight into it, which is funny for a movie that seems to drag so much in the second half, that probably because they spent so, you know, little time establishing this sort of relationship. But even though we all ooh and ah about ONJ and John Travolta, in many ways they don't have much chemistry together at all, you know, and I don't know if it's just this film only, but yeah, that's what struck me straight away, especially in this robbery scene that you mentioned as well. Very awkward.
She gets fired from the bank for flirting with the bank robber, which she does pretty much, and she's actually the one that steals the money, so lots of spoilers galore. But you know what? I don't think anyone's particularly going to mind.
Oh, definitely. And especially when, you know, as you've said, that, you know, the plot that you've mentioned is pretty much the plot that I picked up on until the second, well, probably about 30 or 40 minutes into it, when it just sort of goes so zany. And I was trying to pinpoint where it all started to go weird. And I think it was actually an actor who I forgot to mention in our list before. It was Oliver Reed playing Satan. Well, I suppose, you know, the Satan character. And I think as soon as he arrived, everything just seemed to go quite strange. And Oliver Reed was known for being quite an alcoholic, especially on set with his films. And I don't know if he was drunk during the filming of this. It was probably recommended, possibly, on the filming of this. But as soon as he came in, it just seemed to go all over the place, especially the notion of rewinding and fast-forwarding, which they tend to use to some sort of, to me, kind of an annoying effect. There was one scene where they were fast-forwarding, rewinding, you know, and when I say this, I mean, you know, the future of their lives and, you know, oh, if something bad happened, or let's take it back about 5 minutes. But there were some times there where I'm just cringing going, oh, did someone at Fox suddenly find the rewind and fast forward effect in the machine? Let's use it as much as we can in this movie.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's what I thought, like, one of the things that struck me early on in the movie where they, where there's an accident and it almost seems like it's going to be a very short movie with both Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta being killed. Then along come these angels or God's flunkies, whatever you want to call them, and rewind time to sort of like rearrange things a bit so that, you know, the two leads don't die. And at that point I'm thinking, Well, what's the point of having an arbitrary time limit if they can just keep rewinding stuff and fixing it along the way? It just doesn't seem to make sense. And then along comes a scene where they're just consistently rewinding and fast-forwarding, because in comes the devil to mix a mischief in, and then Gene Hackman's god is the one who puts his foot down and tells them that they can't do that anymore, which I suppose does conveniently get rid of that plot hole that had been sitting there in the back of my head up to that point.
Well, I definitely think, you know, as you mentioned, a few things with the, you know, the rewinding, the fast-forwarding, and, you know, why didn't they just do these things all along? You know, there's a lot of scenes with the flunkies or the angels, I suppose, that they were doing such human things, but I don't know if it was the fact that they were on Earth as well, too. But, you know, in many ways, you know, I'm going to refer to one scene, which to me was quite an odd scene, but it involved binoculars and the three of them. And you think to yourself, mm-hmm. if you've got all these powers, you're using binoculars and sitting on a windowsill like a pervert. and that scene in question I've actually written down here, because I, you know, it was actually, you know, it was harping on, like I said earlier, the Danny and Sandy, the later years, and it was almost a side to Danny and Sandy from Grease that you maybe didn't really want to see. You've got Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta pretty much having sex by an open window as these angels watch on with their binoculars. Even one is eating an apple during it. And as I said, it was a sexy side to them that, for a couple that didn't have the chemistry, as I mentioned earlier, it just doesn't feel right. Oh, I don't know, seeing Olivia Newton-John undo the cord strings of John Travolta's pants and then it segueing, oh, I don't know, there was something about it that made me cringe.
Yeah, it was a very awkward, intimate scene, which definitely is not helped by voyeuristic angels. But then I noticed, like, they didn't go all the way, though, because the cut's back and she's going, oh, I suppose you're not going to like me because I don't want to go any further. And then John Travolta shows that, yes, he was an early 80s snag. He just completely understands and completely empathizes with her with this stirring speech about how he understands her feelings. It's like, I don't believe a word of what you're saying, buddy, but hey, good job for trying to be a good example of a sensitive new age guy.
Well, it was funny how they even tried to sort of, you know, it's funny they're continuing on sort of I know we keep harping on Grease, but I couldn't help but think it, you know. But they really developed something at the end of Grease with, you know, Olivia Newton-John coming out of her shell as this sort of bad girl, and they could have run a bit more with that sort of bad girl image, because I believe, you know, a couple of years after when this movie had come out, a couple of years prior, sorry, Physical had come out, and that kind of changed her image at the time. So I'm surprised she kind of went back to being this very meek, mild, gentle character, which I suppose essentially she always is. But I don't know, it would have been fun to see her play more of a bad girl rather than someone with a really bad, is mullet the word? 80s hairdo and shoulder pads. But, I'm a fan of Olivia, and I feel bad speaking of her acting, but it's, it really stands out to me as being not quite on cue here. And even she said that she's not actually a very good actor. And there's even a lot of, I suppose, art imitating life in this film, which I felt, you know, you've got her, you know, her character saying she left her hometown, maybe Australia, to become an actress. And interestingly, John Travolta can only reply with, and then he moves on to the next thing. I actually think, and then you've got that other scene earlier on where Olivia Newton-John's at an acting class and she actually, you know, it's acknowledged that she's terrible. And all she can do as she tries to recite this monologue is crack up at how bad she is. And I'm just watching this going, are these outtakes? Are these, you know, is this rehearsal? and I read a really funny quote, and I know I want to share it. Is Olivia Newton-John playing someone who wants to be an actress is like Tom Cruise playing someone who wants to be tall. I'm going to leave it at that.
Pretty much does sum that up very, very nicely. So,
I thought so too.
I'm going to have to ask this question. I don't know if there's any point asking this question, but it's the whole reason we do this segment. Christian, do you have any redeeming features for Two of a Kind?
Well, look, I'm going to go on a bit of a segue before I answer a bit of a yes or a no to this. I was going the angle of, hey, you're repairing Danny and Sandy. Or seeing these two famous actors repaired again. And since we've been talking, I've been thinking about it more, going, no, it's actually a side to them that's kind of creepy and it doesn't really work. So I can't really use that as a redeeming feature. I was going to say, hey, definitely, if you want an incentive to watch it and you want to see, it would probably be seeing these two together, you know, if you're a fan, but, you know, not to go out of your way. But in terms of redeeming features, you can't even, I thought I'd even go the angle of, what about the platinum selling soundtrack? Interestingly, the soundtrack did go platinum, and it was, I believe, to do with the Olivia Newton-John singles that were released from it, about three she had. One of those is a song called Twist of Fate, which maybe you've heard before, Trevor. But anyway, I can't use the soundtrack as a redeeming feature because that's very irredeemable as well. So really, I'm quite stuck. If I had to look at my watch or look at the running time of the film the entire way through, almost at 5-minute intervals, you know how bad that is? That to me sounds like an irredeemable film. I'm glad to have seen it, to have got it out of my system, but I don't want that experience again.
Fair enough. I mean, I was actually did notice over the closing credits, following the rule that we got to watch it to the very, very end. And I do remember that Twist of Fate song. Well, I should say I was reminded of it due to watching this movie, which I wasn't too pleased about. It is, though, once you get past the Olivia Newton-John songs, it is quite the who's who of 80s artists. I believe Journey's on there, and there's quite a few notable names. You don't really notice them too much during the movie because the main songs that get featured are the O&J tunes. I can probably say the best thing about this was that, hey, at least it wasn't a full-on musical, and hopefully that's because they learnt a few valuable lessons from Xanadu. I got nothing else, though. Everything's irredeemable. It's awful.
Oh, yeah, it's like that, Trevor. I'm really struggling. Yeah, you know, and hey, if you want a bit of an 80s time capsule, you know, and hey, what did Olivia Newton-John rules say? Something about, you know, these people in the 80s. Well, hey, if you want a bit of a slice of that, possibly a bit of a 1983 nostalgia wave, and possibly see these two repaired again, that's probably the only recommendation. But more as a curiosity factor, Trevor, I really don't think your life benefits in any way of seeing it. I wouldn't even spend the money to buy the movie. Hey, I hired it, but, you know, I'd pay $2. I wouldn't pay $5.
Fair enough. So, yeah, I'm just saying straight out, you do not need to see this movie, guys. I know we do say that a lot of the movies that we watch, while bad, are worth a watch. But you know what? There's some which is just like, don't worry about it. Don't bother. If you like Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta and their chemistry and their pairing up in Greece, just stick with that. You do not want to tarnish your memories of Greece with this pile of tripe. Simple, irredeemable. Don't bother about it.
Definitely.
Move on. So, I think we're pretty much in agreement on this one then, Christian.
Oh, definitely. I think we're in agreement that we need never speak of this film ever again. It need never pass through anyone's DVD player. And, hey, if you end up watching it, good for you, but maybe we don't really want to hear from people about it.
Well, you know what? If you for some reason, like this movie, I want to hear why. I'm always open to other people's redeeming features. And certainly, at the end of the podcast, I'll give you the full rundown of all our contact details, so that you can let us know what you think. If, however, you're happy to move on and watch something else entirely, our next redeeming features, we're going a bit of a different taste, a different flavour, would you say, Christian?
Oh, definitely. You know, the taste of blood, the taste of water. Is that a weird way of saying it? I don't know. I think, let's just say we're going to possibly one of my favourite subgenres, the sequel. You know, we often touch on those, so I'll be interested to chat about our next film.
Yep, so if you want to check that out before the next podcast, why not take a trip back to 1987 and watch Jaws The Revenge? And, that's another one. If you watch it before the next podcast, we'd love to hear your thoughts. In the meantime, though, thank you, Christian.
Thank you, Trevor, and good luck to those who watch Two of a Kind. See you on the other side, maybe. It's gotta be a strange twist of fate. Telling me that heaven can wait. Telling me.
We are now in the middle of February, and the events just keep on coming. I'm pleased to announce some great events that are coming up over the following weeks and months. On Saturday, the 21st of February, New Globe Theatre, as part of their Beatles vs. Rolling Stones band night, are screening Give Me Shelter at 6:30 p.m. Give Me Shelter is the infamous Rolling Stones documentary from 1970, which follows their adventurous slash tragic concert at Altamont Raceway. Tickets are available at the door for that, and $10 for the movie or $15 gets you into the Beatles vs. Rolling Stones night, which should be a lot of fun as well. Actually, if you'd rather stay in the cinema for something a bit more modern, we've got the 80s hair metal glam rock video party. All your favourite hits of Motley Crue, Poison, Whitesnake, Def Leppard, those 80s hair rock bands, on the big screen from 8:30 until late. Tickets will be available at the door for that, so get out your spandex, your tight pants, and get ready to tease your hair, because this night is going to be huge. I return to Calibre Lounge on Saturday the 28th of February for the 80s vs 90s party. Two of the biggest decades in recent times meet head-on for the ultimate retro party. 20 years of classic hits with dueling DJs, dance floor, and licensed bar. And even better, it's free, kicking off at 7 p.m. at Calibre Lounge, Brunswick Street, Fortitude Valley. Now, in terms of film, we're really excited to say we're coming up at the end of February is the 15th anniversary screening of American Psycho. Still waiting on final confirmation, but watch this space because we're looking forward to announcing that very soon. Looking ahead, early March, Wednesday the 4th of March, first Wednesday of the month, I return to what was originally called Room 60, which is now the Menagerie at Kelvin Grove Urban Village, doing my trash movies at 6:30 p.m. There are talks of possibly a John Waters film and even some horror movies for Friday the 13th of March, but tickets are now on sale for the Rocky Horror Picture Show with Live Floor Show. You've heard us talk about it before. Cards for Sorrow are now infamous for bringing the 1975 cult movie classic to life at Chanel Theatre. That's Friday the 20th of March, and tickets are available now at www.christianfletcher.com, and that's where you'll also find a list of my upcoming events. Find me on Facebook, and I look forward to seeing you in a crowded foyer real soon.
Now, what would the Rufus Project be without a cool competition? And yep, we've got another good one out there, especially if you like classic movies and classic music. Christian has very generously donated a double pass to the Rolling Stones' Give Me Shelter at the New Globe Theatre in Fortitude Valley, Queensland, on Saturday the 21st of February, starting at 6:30 p.m. If you want to win tickets to this wonderful event, then simply leave a comment saying, "Give me tickets." That easy. All the details about where to leave those comments, I'll let you know in just a moment. In the meantime, though, good luck. And hopefully we can see you at this fantastic event. Thanks so much for listening to The Rufus Project. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed putting it together. Now, if you would like to leave us a comment, some feedback, or enter that great competition, could not be simpler. We are on Facebook, we are on Twitter, we are on YouTube, we are on Ustream. We have a homepage, therufusproject.podomatic.com. All the links are down below, and we're also very, very easy to find on Google. Want to go a step further and tell us what you really think about us? Why not leave us a review on iTunes? That would be much appreciated. If you want your correspondence to be a bit more private, you can also send us an email, rufusreviews@gmail.com. We are also keen to hear from you if you have an event or if you're someone who you think could be a good feature for our local wildlife section. We're always on the lookout for people to chat with, and you know what? You don't need to be from Brisbane or even from Australia, because on the internet, we are all local. Don't forget to visit our Spreadshirt store, therufusproject.spreadshirt.com.au, for some wonderful, wonderful shirts and a coffee mug with one basic design, but I keep promising it, it's going to happen. We are going to get more designs and more variety in there as soon as possible.
You can also see the music that we've been following, liking, and getting on Bandcamp by heading to bandcamp.com/TheRufusProject. Look, are you spotting a pattern here? We're everywhere, and we're going to keep spreading out further. You cannot avoid us. Now, the moral of this episode of the podcast relates very much to the proliferation of digital services within Australia and the increasing popularity of SAME. If you build it, they will come, especially if you offer them the content at a decent price. See you next time. Look, I know I'm being malicious, but after watching Two of a Kind and hearing the song that I hadn't heard for so long, it got stuck in my head. And I'm going to make you suffer through it too. Can you hear this lyrics? Oh my god, I mean, if that movie wasn't bad enough, this comes crashing in the middle and just really, well, this. Okay, that's enough. I'm not going to make you suffer any more.